Do you remember in Mod as a youngster what you might have done for entertainment or songs or music or movie stars as you were growing up?
That was during the war. I was 11 when the war started.
We're talking about World War II.
World War II.
And December 7th of 1941.
Right. Well, I was 11. By the way, I mentioned Mrs. Harris, the principal. She took every kid in the grade school there, and I guess certainly in the upper grades, into the cafeteria to listen to Churchill's speech at the beginning of the Battle for Britain. I remember that vividly. I learned later that it was a recording, and of course it was a rebroadcast because it was during business hours in this part of the world. But it was very moving, and I was old enough in 1939 to know what he was talking about. That Churchill speech was in 1940 when the Battle for Britain started. And then in 1941, after Pearl Harbor, Mrs. Harris had everybody in the auditorium to hear President Roosevelt make the Day of Infamy speech. I remember that very vividly at the age of 11.
You were so young, it was probably hard to understand what it all meant, but you do remember the speech.
I do remember it, and I did have a very good idea of what it meant and had that explained to me by people who knew. Then I spent time in my dad's store and listened to people talk about it. The World War I veterans would come in and they would talk about it. I remember when they invaded Poland, one of these old veterans says, well, they don't know what they're in for, these Germans. Says, when they run into that Polish cavalry, this will all be over. That was a World War I idea.
Do you remember men from your area that when the war broke out, they began to volunteer?
Oh, yes. My aunt was secretary of the draft board, so I talked to her from time to time. Anyway, yes, I do remember talking to people about that, and especially to some of these veterans of World War I.
Because there was a discussion prior to December 7th, 41, whether the United States should even enter the war at all.
Yes. And I learned a little bit about that in school, and I just have vague memories of it. But teachers in the upper grades of grade school anyway, that is fifth and sixth grade, they talked about that. And I certainly knew who Hitler was and what was going on.
During the war, you were 11, 12, 13, 14.
Yeah.
You were 14 when you went to Oklahoma Military Academy
right.
in 1944, and the war wasn't over yet. So you didn't know how long this war was going to go on, and all those thoughts had to be running through your head.
That's right. We had horse cavalry there at OMA, so we were training for a modern war with horses. Of course, we understood that that was not going to be the way that war was fought or was being fought. This was 1944. But we still had the horses, and we still did the cavalry drills. We'd have a maneuver every Saturday, a problem we'd call it, and the enemy's coming from here and we're defending this. More than once, the solution to the problem would be to have a cavalry charge with our horses. We had about 90 of them, enough for a company, and we'd line up one company and they would charge across the landscape there. And very unrealistic, but someone made the point, it worked because a lot of these fellas went from OMA into the Army, and a lot of them, by the way, were lost, but did very well in the Army.
There was no point in you then going into the Army because the war was over as you were graduated from junior college in 48. Then it was just a natural progression to further your education.
Exactly. So I went to OU. I had finished all my ROTC qualifications. I graduated from OU in 1950, and guess what happened? I graduated in January, and in June, a war started, so my dad's fear of my being called into the military came to pass only just a few years later. So I wound up in the Army in 1950.
And the war you're talking about is the Korean War.
Korean War.
You spent 2 years in the Army, did you then?
I did.
So right out of OU.
Right out of OU, I had gotten a job at the Seminole Producer, my hometown paper. I'd been working there as a student at OU, and I knew the people there. In fact, one summer, it may have been the summer of 49, I don't know, I was at the ball game. They had the Sooner State League in those days, and I was at the ballpark, and the publisher, the producer, Mel Phillips, called me over and said, I see you around the office a lot, and you're working with us. If you'll come by my desk tomorrow, I'll put you on the payroll. You might as well work with us this summer. And so I worked summers there and weekends as a student. Then when I got out of school, I went to work immediately.
So then how long were you able to work before you had to join the Army?
The war started in June, and I went in the Army in October. So I worked about 10 months, maybe.
Right. Your experience there with the Korean War, where did you serve? Who did you serve with? What battalion?
I went at first to Fort Sam Houston, and they sent me to Camp Polk, Louisiana, to the station complement there, the housekeeping unit that ran the post. The 45th Division, Oklahoma National Guard, had been mobilized in September, and they had just arrived there. So I immediately started efforts to try to get transferred into the 45th. I wanted to go into the reconnaissance company because it was from Claremore, and a lot of my friends from school and people I knew were in the company, and they had a recruiting motto which hit me as, go with the men you know. So I was going to go with the men I knew, and I did get the transfer, but I was assigned to the tank battalion instead of the reconnaissance company, and that's where I spent the rest of the war. Yeah. I was a tank platoon leader, second lieutenant.
You came in, you were commissioned.
I had been commissioned after graduation from OU.
And all that training that your father wanted you to have paid off handsomely for you.
Well, it did. I'm not sure that being a second lieutenant was a great advantage in World War II or Korea, but it wasn't a disadvantage either. So I went to Camp Polk, got in the 45th, and we trained there. Then we went to Japan. That was a great adventure for me. I hadn't been around the world very much from Maud. We left New Orleans and went through the Panama Canal. We stopped briefly on the west coast of San Francisco and then on to the west side of Japan in Hokkaido. That's the northernmost island, and trained there. One day, by this time it was 1951, General Ridgway came down from Tokyo to inspect the 45th. He inspected it. We turned out on the airport runway there to greet him. Quite a big deal. I remember it because the great man came to my platoon on this inspection and stopped and talked to one of my tank commanders, Sergeant Anderson, and he asked him, how many tanks do you have in service in this company and how many are on deadline and out of operation? Anderson says, well, I don't know exactly, sir, but we keep as many as we can in service because we can't get parts. But if we have one that we need a part, we take it from one of the other tanks that's out of service and keep as many as we can in service. Well, it happens that that's called cannibalism, and it's a great sin in the Army. Everybody does it, taking parts from one vehicle and putting them in another. So Ridgway was very upset with this and chewed everybody out.
Did General Ridgway immediately have a comment to Anderson?
No, he didn't. He didn't argue with Anderson. He was very kind to Anderson. He started with the commanding general of the 45th, and that worked its way back down to me.
So Anderson outed them.
Well, Anderson actually probably, he got off lighter than anybody because everybody knew what he was trying to do, and no one was going to make too much trouble for him. But
yeah.
Anyway... Pardon me, war story. But
yeah, that's what we want, those war stories.
But the upshot of Ridgway's visit was that the 45th had completed its training there, the final cycle of training, and it was a perfectly trained division ready for service in the field, fully equipped. He decided that there's no reason for this division to sit there with exhausted troops, some of them in pretty bad shape in Korea. So he sent the 45th to Korea to relieve the 1st Cavalry Division, which was, I suppose, still recovering from the horrible experiences of the previous year, the battles up along the Yalu and the withdrawal back into Seoul. So that's how we got to Korea. We got there on New Year's Eve, 1951, and went into Incheon Harbor. Our first view of that was a little island called Wami Do, which looked like a bald head with a few hairs sticking up on the back side. It had been covered with trees, but they were completely taken off of there by artillery from the seaward side, and then a few stumps sticking up at the back. And that was the first thing they took at Incheon. So this was our first look at it.